Welcome to The Sober Effect, a show that looks at the positives of sobriety, the dangers of alcohol, and the many people who are affected by it. I'm Kate.
And I'm Steph. The ripple effect of alcohol is far-reaching, and those are the stories you'll hear on The Sober Effect.
Sex. Steph, this is not a topic that's been easy for us, has it?
No. We're like a couple of third graders over here trying to figure out how to even introduce this one. But it was a great conversation. I'm really excited for the listeners to hear this because it is a private thing for most of us, but it's also something we all have in common. The uncomfortableness, the vulnerability, what we do now that we don't have alcohol. We touch on all of that today with our guest, Cindy, who is a sex educator. I think she said 25 years she's been talking about this topic.
She used to sell sex toys and stuff, didn't she? And then became sober and then became a therapist. And so all of her knowledge is kind of culminated in this. But it's about more than just kind of how do you have sex when you're sober? How does it change? Because it's made me think, you know, I've drunk throughout my whole adult life, which goes hand in hand with the fact that I will have been drinking every time I've had sex, pretty much. I mean, it's just that realization in itself is pretty shocking to me. And I think the way that she looks at it, it's kind of like a new beginning and it's having to start again. And I really like that. I know this is sort of the same in America. I thought it was just very British not talking about sex, but it's not something I do even with my closest friends. I just don't discuss it. I don't feel comfortable discussing it. But actually, this conversation has made me realize that it's something you should at least discuss with your partner,
right?
With the person you're having sex with. That really should be okay. It should not be something that is scary. And I think that's what I got out of this conversation the most. And I think it's so much nicer to think that we're back in control of who we basically get naked with, who we do things with, who we experience that level of kind of personal relationships with. And because you're so much more present, it is just a totally different experience. And it is exciting. The thought of actually starting to build a sexual relationship with someone without any alcohol, you've got to be brave, don't you? I mean, it's completely different because you're not getting drunk, but without that alcohol, you're also remembering everything, feeling things totally differently. And I think that is so cool. She has really made me look at everything differently.
Yeah. And I can say, you know, having the contrast of like drunk sex and then sober sex, for me personally, I prefer sober sex because I feel like I get more out of it. I get more enjoyment out of it. I mean, you got to think about drunk sex. Yeah, it may give you that initial letting go of the inhibitions and like the vulnerability and the ability to get into the act. But I feel like then there's this layer of numbness, right? You don't really feel things and you're not like connecting. And I feel like sober sex for me personally is way more enjoyable.
Should we introduce Cindy? We know everyone's waiting to hear from her, don't we? We've had so many messages saying, when is this episode out? Let's bring her in.
The first thing I think to start out with is probably if you want to go into some misconceptions that there are around sober sex.
Sure. And I think, you know, just to bring up like why we don't talk about sex very much in general, and then, oh, okay, now we're sober. Now we really don't talk about it because it feels uncomfortable for us. So I think some of the things that people have wrong is like you have to have alcohol in your system in order to be sexy, right? To get into the mood, to like sex. That's a big one. A lot of women and men as well. So I don't want to exclude it. Like it can be non-binary, like it is these feelings, but overwhelmingly I work with women and they have these feelings like, I don't know how to be sexy without the alcohol, number one. And number two, I don't know that I really enjoy sex as much as I maybe did when I was drinking. That's a big realization and it's tough to admit that. It's a very vulnerable thing to say, especially if you're having a conversation with your partner. If you've been in a relationship, you're still in that relationship when you're sober. It was the hardest conversation for me to have, just to admit that and to, you know, just to be that vulnerable and say, I don't know. Yeah. Like, I don't know what's wrong with my body. So I think some of those things are really big ones.
You just said to have that conversation yourself. Tell us a little bit, like, do you mind mind sharing that, like how that went for you?
So I am a little over 7 years sober. And alcohol was my drug of choice. Like I was the epitome of the drinking mom. And I was newly divorced, and been in a relationship then for, I don't know, 3 or 4 years before my sobriety, before I took my last drink. And that realization was when I stopped drinking, you know, I realized like this has been my go-to. I have always had a glass of Pinot Grigio at night, sometimes two, sometimes three, sometimes a box. Like I always had that. And I connected that sex, that was just part of it. It was connected to me subconsciously. Like I just thought that's what I always had. And to back up a little bit, like I am a sex educator. I've worked in the industry for 25 years, meaning like I talk about sex for a living. I sold sex toys for 14 years. And a big part of my career was telling people, you know, have a little bit of this before you do this. Like that's what I did. And so there was a lot of guilt for me, like, because I not only associated that in my head, I also told thousands of women that exact same thing, that it was necessary. And so that was really hard for me. And so to be able to be vulnerable with my partner and tell him, like, I need you to know that most of the time, I'd say all the time, but most of the time that we have been intimate, I have had at least a glass of Pinot Grigio, like, or, you know, a glass, whatever it was. Like, I have always had at least that. And, you know, and he was like, oh, I don't know what was actually running through his mind, but I do remember his reaction, like, okay, so, but you're not now. Okay, let's go. You know, like, I was so hung up on it. I was so, like, felt so much guilt and shame. And he was like, all right, but you're not now. You've got, you know, 11 days. That's awesome. So it was, I don't know. I think I made it bigger than it needed to be. But I, once, you know, years out, I look back and I'm like, I had to say that. I had to communicate that to him. It was important to say that.
It's like foreplay, really, the wine. It's like, I've always had, I mean, when I stopped drinking, I remember thinking, when I was thinking about sex, thinking, God, this is going to be really weird, you know, and Steph and I don't talk about this stuff with each other, with friends. We before this conversation, we said, what are we going to say? Let's hope Cindy has got a lot to say, because we're just going to be sitting here listening, taking in what she's saying. But I remember thinking, have I ever had sex when I haven't been drinking? I mean, literally, I had to think about it. Because they always went hand in hand, you know, and I never drank for confidence. But actually, when it comes to the bedroom, it's a whole different story, isn't it? And that is a very difficult thing. And it's a very difficult thing, I think, in women's minds, because in my experience, sex between men and women, the way they think and the reasons they have sex and the things that they enjoy are very different. And with women, it's a very mental process. So actually using wine and then saying, suddenly I haven't got that, I'm just naked, excuse the pun.
For sure.
It's hard. It's quite scary. It's like starting from the beginning again.
You've hidden behind it. Like that, I like to say, like, you know, you used it as kind of this shield for yourself, and you do all of a sudden become much more self-conscious. Like, you know, it does, alcohol releases, you know, those things in you that like, oh, my inhibitions are gone now. Like I'm amazing. Like I'm the best lover ever. Like, look how beautiful I am. Doesn't matter like how you feel outside of your body, like at 9 a.m. on a Tuesday, all of a sudden in that moment, you're like, I got this, right? So it makes you feel more comfortable. And plus, we can talk about this later, but we think about what media does, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this is what has been drilled in our brains forever, like the imagery of we look sexy. And so we've got all this subconscious stuff going on in our head. So of course we're kind of like, when we don't have that to hide behind anymore, we're all of a sudden going, how do I look? Does this look okay? Like, do I smell? I wonder what I taste like. Like, I don't know. Is he going to be turned on, turned off? Like, oh, and then in reverse as well, Kate, like, I think we then think about our partner a little bit more. I have clients who will be like, I don't know that I really like him anymore. Like, he does this. These are the things that are kind of annoying to me now. And I've never noticed. Why have you never noticed that? Oh, because you've been pretty much drunk every time you've been together. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of realization happening too.
The vulnerability part. How do you help people with that when the alcohol stripped away and now we've got to learn to have the self-esteem and the confidence to maybe even initiate sex? Because I know that's like a big one for me. Initiating it. Like, I have no problem having sex, but I'm not going to be the one initiating it. And I know that that's a problem within my marriage. So like when someone comes to you with that, now that they're sober, what are some of the tools or things you tell them they can work on?
Absolutely, Steph. And just know, like, the thing is that you're not alone, right? So this, like you said earlier, Kate, people aren't having these conversations. That's what I talk about for a living. And yet I can't find any sober people to talk about this with me. It just was confusing to me. And so now that I think those conversations are happening, for sure, Steph, I think that you've already identified that for you, it's not so much sex, like the act of it and being connected. It's about the initiation piece. Mm-hmm. For a lot of women, it's just the opposite. It is, I can start it, but I, when I'm in it, I'm not sure. Like, I don't know, nothing's happening like it used to happen. So I think you identifying that it's just about like, well, I don't know how to start it. And is that a matter of no alcohol or is that just a matter of life? Right. And so I think that that's where we have to be really careful, is placing blame on alcohol for all the things in our relationship. And that's what I hesitate. Like that's where I work with people. You know, I would suggest, you know, is it about the alcohol or is it about that you're a busy person and you've got a lot going on? And regardless if it was alcohol, like maybe that might help you initiate it. But now that you don't have that, like you're going to have to make an extra special effort. What does that mean for you? What would feel comfortable? What feels odd? Is it okay to schedule sex? I mean, I am a huge advocate of something like, oh, always spontaneous. I'm like, it's okay to say, I know that on Friday afternoon at 4, this is what we're going to do. I know the kids will be gone. I know that I can start preparing. Now, I know that there are some who are like, no, I can't do that, because then that's going to make me anxious. And I'm like, work myself up like, ooh. But for some women, we need that preparation, right? We don't want to be caught off guard. We want to be able to put some deodorant on, take a shower, clean up. We want to be able to be in control. If that's not you, go for it spontaneously. But for a lot of women, it is like, I need to kind of control that. That might help you in those initial moments. You know, just to communicate too, that's a super big one with your partner. Like, look, I know that since I've stopped drinking, I'm not like really starting the conversations, right? I'm not hitting on you. I'm not flirting as much as I used to. You know, can you be honest in that conversation with your partner? And that's what I suggest to people, is like, have you communicated this with your person, your loved one? No, oh my gosh, no, like this is my deal. It really isn't. It's the two of you kind of working together. And again, like you said, vulnerability, like, hey, like I realize, I talked with this person today and, you know, our Kate and I were chatting and I realized that I have a hard time just switching the button, right? Or switching the switch, like turning the button on, right? Yeah. I have a hard time with that. And maybe that's the time your partner kind of steps it up. Like, okay, well, what would this feel comfortable with? You know, just having those conversations.
It's definitely that for me, for sure, is the vulnerability part. Even bringing it up, because like I said, it just feels like so uncomfortable to have these conversations. I'm kind of this person. This is just who I am. I just think everyone should read my mind and know what I'm thinking and know what I'm feeling. And I shouldn't have to ask. Like, you should just do it. And that's on me. Like, that is definitely on me. And I know that I need to just do it. Just have the conversation. But yeah, it's definitely, those are conversations, though, I will say, I always needed alcohol to have those conversations.
Of course.
Like even not even about sex, just even to communicate, you know, other wants or needs or problems. I have a hard time doing that without alcohol. So it's definitely in the bundle of things of vulnerability, you know, that I need to start learning how to open up and talk about.
You need to start writing little notes there.
I know.
Yeah. Leaving them like in the fruit bowl, like I'm upstairs. I haven't got anything on. I'll be here for 10 minutes. Because actually, do you know what, Cindy? British people talk about tea and the weather and they don't talk about sex. And we are on opposite ends of the spectrum. People don't do it. Even best friends don't do it. Obviously, some do and lots do. But I don't have conversations about sex with my friends. I just don't. It's a private thing. It's not something I enjoy talking about. It's not something I want to talk about. And that's a bit of a problem because, you know, well, for me also, something else I wanted to ask you was, you know, my husband drank for the first 2 years. He's not drinking at the moment, but I found that revolting, the smell. Yeah. I didn't find him revolting. And I'm really lucky because I know a lot of people who have gone off their husbands when they've gone sober. That's not necessarily about sex. That's about something else. But physically, I don't want to kiss someone who's been drinking. It's disgusting. And that was a big problem because he drank pretty much every night. So, you know, that is something I'm sure you're familiar with. And that's something that I guess you just have to say, I don't want to do it. I don't find you attractive. And I have said that to my husband and he's kind of gone, yeah, no, I get that. I understand.
I mean, Kate, I applaud you for that because that's huge. Like you have your line, and especially in sobriety, we have to protect our sobriety. And, you know, if for a lot of people, for them, if it is the smell of alcohol, for some of it's, you know, I can't go to a football game or I can't go to a soccer match or I can't go to this bar because it brings back, like, it's just such a trigger. You know, if it's the taste of it, of course, like that's dealing with all of your senses, the smell, the taste. And so I think you identifying that and articulating that to your partner is huge. You can't control their response. You hope that you have a compassionate partner that says, I totally get it. Yeah. Like, sounds like you said, like, I get it. Like, that makes sense to me. But I think just being clear with that, be like, look, if I smell this on you, if I even taste this on you, or I am aware, obviously, like we I think our radars go up in sobriety.
Yeah.
We're like, I can tell, like, you may not be telling me the truth. You may have had 5 mints, in, you know, like before you got in. But I can tell by the way you're acting that you did do this. Like you've been in the public. And so I think that we have this like heightened sense. And so, you know, just communicating that to them is huge. Like this will not happen if you have been doing this. That's it. That's my hard line. And it's like that in our relationships too. Like, you know, whatever your line in your relationship is, we're not going to go down this route. We might try this, but we're not going to do this. Like that's just, I'm not open to that right now. It's the same kind of dynamics of this will work for us, this won't. And Kate, I want to tell you really quick, you know, when you said that we don't talk a lot about it there, I know it seems like we talk about it more in the States. Like I sold sex toys to like suburban moms, right? And the fact that I was like, I had 2 little kids. I had like a 4 and 6 at the time. And I'm slaying dildos out of my garage. And But it was the biggest like, oh, like I can't believe. But the second I got a group of women together and gave them permission to have the conversation, and the second one person said, well, I would never use this, you know, like whatever it was, the conversation started happening. However, there was almost always alcohol that was involved. Yes. And that makes me sad. It makes me cringe. But it was it opened up conversations. And that's what I want to remove. That's what I want to change. I want to be able to sit at 8 a.m. in Colorado and have a conversation with y'all about this because we need to talk about it.
I've been to those parties. I actually, in my 20s, it was a really big thing. So that was like 20 years ago, right? And it was like, yeah, we'd have someone like you come to the house. We'd have tons of alcohol and we would just sit around and giggle and laugh. But yeah, we had to have the alcohol to feel comfortable having that conversation with each other and like holding a dildo in our hand and like laughing about it or even purchasing some of that stuff. Like I bought stuff and it's like, I probably wouldn't have bought it if I didn't have the liquid courage to have done that, you know?
How are we going to do it? How are we going to get people? Because that's the first thing, isn't it? You can't initiate more sex, have more sex, feel more comfortable in your body, talk more about it if you're scared to even say the word. You know, I mean, honestly, even saying the word vibrator makes me feel like I've got to quickly check that there's no one standing outside who might hear me say it. It's just, and it's nice to know that it's like that in America. I mean, it's not nice, but it's nice to know it's not just the Brits because we have got this kind of Downton Abbey kind of stereotype, but it's not far off, if I'm honest. I mean, honestly, it's really bizarre. And my parents are American and I remember them talking about sex at a dinner party and thinking, oh, this is awful. Imagine if my friends could hear this. But it was kind of like, well, what do you mean? You're here. We all know we've had sex. Come on, don't be so ridiculous. And it always felt different for me with the kind of the American, the British, but I'm sure it's the same in all cultures, actually. We're just hiding behind all these natural things, you know, and even in the sex toy shops here, because one of my really good friends worked in one. And I remember going in and they had alcohol on the counter. So when you went in, the first thing they did was offer you a drink as if to say, it's okay, have a drink, you can get through this. Why?
Absolutely. I mean, that's just the way it is. You know, here, like it depends on what state you're in. Sometimes it's just like, here's a shot of something and go for it. And it's just, there's such a strong connection between alcohol and sex. Like it's huge.
We could expand. It's there. We've all been there as well. And we've all admitted we used alcohol to kind of just loosen us up and go, I can do whatever I want. I'm not going to be embarrassed. And that's the key word here, is that we feel embarrassed. I've been with my husband for 16 years and I would feel embarrassed to kind of wink at him and say, and that's crazy. It's just because it's not anything. I've never acted like that unless I've been drunk. So how will we, change this? You know, obviously talking like this, but you're the sexpert. So tell us, what do we need to do?
I think you know, you recognize it. Like, you're just like, I could never because I don't. What if I just encouraged you to be open to it? Like, what if I started to flirt a little bit more? Like, it might feel a little awkward at first, but you know, like, what are the things that turn you on, that make you excited? Okay. Is it when he empties the dishwasher, or is it when that sounds silly, but it's not all of this like hot and heavy stuff. Like, oh, when he like caresses me on the neck, like, okay, well,
That doesn't happen.
That doesn't work.
That's not realistic to many of us. Like, it could be like, he just took 3 big chores off of my plate. Like, that feels huge. I feel much more relaxed now. So therefore, I might feel like I can maybe make a move, you know, and it's not like make a move. It sounds so cliche, but like, just, you know, being open to, what if I try? Like, what if instead of every time I walked past him, you know, I don't ever really look at him. And what if you just start to touch him? What if, you know, what if you pat him on the butt? Like, what if you just gave him, you know, a pat on the shoulder, or just whispered in his ear, like, hey, thanks for doing that, you know, whatever that chore was, right? Or thank you. And creating some type of connection with his, you know, I know we talk, like, I don't know if y'all have read a lot about the whole love language thing. Like, there's this whole, you know, what's your love language? And it's like what you like to receive, what makes you feel loved. And then your partner has a language, right? And it's like what they like and what, and they're often they're opposite things. Like, so for one, it could be touch. Like, your partner might really like to, how do I say this? They feel more connected by touch. And I hate when people go, oh, that means he like needs to have his penis held. No, that means like a brush on the hand, a squeeze, touching their hair, things like that. If that is their love language, that's not mine. Don't be touching my hair. But what I need from you is affirmation. Okay, so that's mine. Like, I need to hear I'm amazing, I'm beautiful, whatever it is, right? Yeah. You know, I need to hear those things. And so what I suggest for, you know, people is just to, what does turn you on? What would make you feel more at ease? What would make you feel more connected? And I think shifting from the word sex, like, that's our outcome, that's our goal today on Friday, we're going to have sex. And I think that if we reframe it to intimacy, and intimacy is just, you know, having a connection with someone. And so I think by just kind of creating that connection, Kate, and knowing that, what if our goal today is just to feel intimately connected? And that might mean something for you, Kate, that is different than Steph, right? Like, you may want to be held. You may want to just be safe. You may want to be reminded how amazing you are. You may want to not be held. But I think identifying that, Kate, and being aware of that, and Steph, for you as well. Like, what would feel good? How could I feel intimately connected to my partner? So little things like that. I think knowing what that is for yourself. Like, yeah, like I said, don't be touching me. I don't need all that. But you better 2 hours before, like, I better look at my phone, and I would love to see some messages that, like, hey, how are you? Like, I've been thinking about you all day. Like, I can't wait till we go to, you know, get tacos tonight. You know, it could be something like that, that you have thought about me throughout the day.
It's like that at the beginning of a relationship, isn't it?
For sure. And you're starting over again. That's perfect that you just said that, because it feels like we're starting over sometimes when we're sober. It's like you're dating again. Now, obviously, you know, we're in relationships, but if you're even single and now you're sober, that's a whole other thing. But like, it does feel like you're dating again, and you have to like start to build up those things. The things that you used to do may not be enjoyable anymore. And now let's explore. Like, I think it's being open to some of those possibilities. Like, I don't really like that anymore. What is wrong with me? I'm 50 years old and all of a sudden this doesn't feel good to me anymore. That's okay. Let's try this now. You know, like, I mean, I think that's just knowing that that can change.
It's just having that, like, I listened to you talk, and it's having that confidence to just like speak up for yourself. Mm-hmm. and to, I think for me, it's around not having the confidence to speak up for what my needs are, because it's just something that I've just never really done. It's an old childhood thing, right? It's just something I was conditioned to do. And it's learning to like let go of that and speak up. And then, yeah, just being vulnerable enough to express what my needs are. Because I have this thing where, well, if I have to tell you what to do, then it takes the specialness out of it. Kate and I have talked about that. Like, if I have to tell you what to do, then you're just doing it because now I told you to do it. I want you to want to do these things for me. And it's probably a really shitty attitude, as I say it out loud, to probably have, because it's not fair. Like, I would hate for someone to expect me to do things for them and I have like no map and no idea what to do. Like, I would feel like that was unfair. So that, I think, is probably the biggest hang up for me as far as like how to communicate with him without making it feel like I'm forcing him to do things for me.
Yeah. And I think it's just part of like setting those expectations. Like, you know, it's you don't want to be a nagger, right? You want to nag them like, okay, look, I told you 4 months ago that I need to have affirmation to feel loved and you're not giving it to me. Like, and I think that we kind of can do this little cycle back and forth. And I think it's just, it's how we approach it. And I think sometimes that's where we get really like, maybe the alcohol made us approach it differently, but I think just being okay with like, I don't want to have to keep reminding you, or I want you to be spontaneous. I want you to be able to do these things. I would like for you to be able to do these things, not like, and I think that's how we phrase it, like, especially to a man, like sometimes we just have to like work on how we, that they don't feel attacked, that they don't feel like they're not doing a good job. So, you know, I really like it when you do this and you just do it randomly. Like that just feels, it just feels so good to me. Wow. And approaching it versus like, I really would like it if you would just do this without me having to tell you. I think that everybody should be catering to what I believe. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's kind of shifting that and being like, look, I don't actually know. And I would really like if this could happen, and do it from a place of compassion, right? Mm-hmm. Like in grace with each other. Look, I'm newly sober, like, or I'm 2 years sober. I'm still trying to figure this stuff out. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where we as women have to applaud ourselves and celebrate ourselves, because we're trying to figure this out sober. Yeah. And there's so many people in relationships that are trying to figure it out and using alcohol to help them figure it out. And it's not working, right? And so we have this extra layer now that we're just like, look at us, we're sober women and we can do this, and what a gift it is that we're giving ourselves. And yeah, sex is kind of affected by it. Intimacy is kind of affected by it. My relationships are a little bit rocky and I am doing the best that I can do. So I think kind of like, we're always really hard on ourselves for this. I think that we're just like, what's wrong with me? That's the number. I mean, I hear that all the time. People just ask like, what's wrong with me? Something must be wrong with me now. Like, I'm sober and I don't like sex and I'm just, what's wrong? Versus like, let's reframe it and be like, okay, I've never really had sex sober, not very many times. And I had, I'm not really sure. What if I embrace this with it, like an open mind? Like, how can I do things differently? What might I like? When the number one thing, you brought this up, stuff about like, you're not even sure what you like. That's what I always recommend. I always recommend an early sobriety. Like, if you're not really sure, take some time for yourself. And this can be 5 years sober and you're like in a new relationship and you don't know. So many women haven't taken the time to figure out actually what they like. They've relied on a partner to give that to them. But it really is about, it's like touching yourself and being alone and being intimate and feeling like, okay, this is what I like. Like, I like my clitoris touched. Like, what? Like, I can do this myself. Some women have never admitted that to themselves and taken that time for themselves. You know, turn the music up, light some candles for yourself. Nobody's in the house. The dogs are in the kennel. Like, whatever it is, take the time. That's scary. That is really scary for a lot of women. But I encourage like slow little baby steps. Try that and see what you like. Because what you think you like may not be what you like alcohol free.
And I guess if you don't know what you want, how are you going to let someone else know, whether that's vocally or physically or showing them or saying? So it's like going into a sandwich shop and sort of going, I want lunch. And expecting the person giving it to you to put together the most amazing sandwich to your taste. It's just not bloody going to happen, is it?
No. And right, Kate, like same thing too. Like, what if you went in like, you know, I'm in here once a week. You know what I like. You know what I always order. Right, Becca? And, yeah. and Becca's like, I don't really remember you, but I'm not really sure. Yeah. And so you're expecting them, you know, so it could be even about familiarity as well. So yeah. absolutely, Kate, like, I think we want our partners to know exactly what to do. We don't want this pressure of having to figure this out, you know, and some women do. They're like, oh no, I know what it is that I like. And this is what I want you to do. Mm-hmm. This is, feels good to me. And that's where I would like to see a shift to. And it, you know, it's that gray area. There is no right or wrong to this. There is no, I think that's the thing. I think a lot of people think, well, there should be a magic, like, I should get my sex drive back after 3 weeks. 3 weeks after I have my glass of wine. Like, I've had clients come to me and they're like, well, I read in that book, and that book said after 3 weeks you should start getting your sex drive back. And after 6 weeks, it's like the weight loss thing connected to alcohol, right? Like, once you stop drinking, you will lose 10 pounds and you will feel so healthy. And then is it like that for everybody? No. Like, I may have lost, but I put some happy ones on too. And so I think by like saying, like, if there is no magic time, on top of that, may I add, if you are perimenopausal, menopausal, you've got some whole other stuff happening too. And so now you've got to, you know, it's not just about, I stopped drinking. It's that plus my hormone levels are now out of whack, or I might be depressed. I might be having some anxiety. I might be taking medication that is also affecting my sex drive. So it's not just the alcohol piece, right? Oh, and it's also, I have an 18-year-old that just left the house and is scaring me, or it's also my 6-year-old that is throwing tantrums daily and is having trouble at school. It's all of those kinds of mm-hmm. things. But again, now that we've removed alcohol, let's have that conversation about all the other things, and we can't necessarily blame the alcohol for it.
Yeah, because for us women, it's such a mental piece. And I think, I don't know how to, maybe I don't articulate it well enough, but, you know, for men, it's such a physical thing. Like, my husband and I have talked about it. Like, his love language is physical touch. Like, we've done the whole quiz thing. So if he doesn't have physical touch, which I'm really bad with because it is not my love language at all, but if he's not getting the physical touch or even getting the sex, like, he literally doesn't feel loved by me. And I have a hard time wrapping my brain around that, because that's not what sex is for me. Like, sex is something pleasurable and something I do for fun, but it's, at the end of the day, it doesn't make me feel less loved if I don't have that. Things that make me feel loved would be like quality time and words of affirmation, which I feel like do then lead to sex. Don't get me wrong. Like, those do lead to me wanting to have sex, but it's so different. Cause like you said, like, as women, we can have like something that happened that day with the kids or with our job or whatever it is, be so heavy on our minds that we can't get there. Like, we're not there. Where guys can have the world blow up and they would still want to have sex with you. Like, there's such a complete difference. Kate's laughing at me. Sometimes I'm thinking, how do you even want to have sex right now? Like, we just had like the hardest day ever. Like, all this shit happened and that's what you're thinking about? Like, I don't know.
I hear that. It is a generalization that we make, and I want to speak on behalf of some men right now. It's not like that. And I think that men live under this idea that they should and they can have sex all the time, and they crave it all the time. And I encourage us, just as we don't want people making stereotypes about us, right? I think we have to really be careful with doing that with men too, because then when they can't perform, when they're overly stressed, as they get older and maybe their function is changing, like, alcohol affects our sexual function. It affects men too. Like, it decreases their chance of getting an erection. It decreases their chance of having an orgasm. That's out with alcohol. So I think, and then as they get older, we know things change physiologically as well, as they do for us. So I think we have to be careful with assuming that every man, that yours may be Steph and yours may be Kate, but we have to be really careful with making that generalization, because then what if some guy is listening to this and hears, like, oh, here we go again. Like, every man is craving sex and wanting sex, but I don't. Like, I'm extremely overwhelmed with work. Like I have a client whose husband is just, he can't turn off work and shift that to having sex. And I remember hearing that first time, like, okay, that's not statistically how it goes. The research isn't like that. Like, you, yes, typically men want it all the time. But it really, it opened my eyes to thinking, what if I've like just pigeonholed men into that idea that everybody wants this? And the more I kind of start to open my mind to it and think like, oh yeah, like maybe some guys really do struggle with this. And that really is a lot of pressure. And oh, they're also feeling this pressure from their day and their in society and whatever all their things are, and they handle it differently. So that's where I think like just being careful of making those assumptions. And I get it, like Steph, if you know, if touch isn't your thing, and then you feel like, okay, well, I know it's his love language, so I better like stroke his hair for 5 minutes. And you know, when it feels like it's like an obligation, it just doesn't feel natural. But if it's coming from this place of, I can tell he's stressed, again, don't focus on the outcome. This isn't about having an orgasm. This is just about feeling connected and viewing it as that versus maybe just removing the word sex. Just thinking about like, I really want to feel intimate. I want to be feel intimately connected to him.
And then have sex.
And then have sex.
But I think, I mean, I agree with Steph, and I'm only basing this on my experience with my husband because I've been with him for so long. But it is true of him, because whatever happens in the day, whatever tragedy, stress, he would go, well, sex will make it better.
Yeah.
And that's not the way I think. And I think that was kind of what Steph was saying, which was why I was laughing, because it's like, that is spot on for me. I'm like, well, I can't get into that mode until I've got all this out of my brain, because that's what I'll be thinking about. And I don't want to have sex while I'm thinking about the fact that the boiler has just broken or whatever. For me, my mind has to be in a place where I'm not worried about things. I'm not obsessing over anything. There's no anxiety. I think that is my biggest problem, is that, and that's why I drank, ironically, is to quieten my mind, because it goes so quickly. It flits. My mum used to call me the girl with the butterfly brain. She's like, you are literally all over the place. So I think my kind of the things I want to change about sex in my life is that I need to understand how to shift my mind to stop worrying about everything else in the world and have some time for me. And as you say, learn about what I want. This is completely new, and let's look at it that way. That's hard, I think. We've both been like a couple of years sober, and I'm still struggling with kind of controlling my thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Kate, I'd like to say it gets easier. Like I hear you. I'm still that way. It gets better, but it doesn't go away. It's like when our kids are younger and we think, oh, as they get older, the stress and the worry will get less and it will be different. And here I am with my kids as little adults now, and it's freaking worse. Like, and I don't say that to scare people, but I'm like, the worries are different. I thought that, oh, well, once I'm an empty nester, so here's that whole cliche too. Like, I'm an empty nester now. The kids are out of the house. So therefore, we can do whatever we want, whenever we want, right? And so that even I struggle with, because it's still like, now my mind is now focused on, you know, my daughter is 1,000 miles away. Like, she just called me and was so super upset. There's no way I can focus on this kind of stuff. So I don't think that it changes like dramatically. I think it is work. As we know, in our sobriety, we are working on ourselves, right? Like, this isn't just, we just put down the drink. We are now facing all of these feelings that we have maybe pushed away, pushed aside, and now they're like here and we can't hide from them anymore. So I think that giving ourselves permission to be like, I can't just shift it automatically. I realize, like, Kate, I hear you 1,000 times. Like, that is probably the thing I hear the most, is that I don't know how to turn off my head. I don't know how to make these thoughts go away. I don't know how to switch that to, okay, come and get me. Like, I don't know how to do that. And I think by realizing there is no right or wrong to it, I think that it is for each individual, it's their own, like, what will it take for you? Is it quiet time? Is it turning everything off? See, I don't like to be in the quiet. And I've had more people tell me, like, you need to meditate. If you meditate, Cindy, that will help calm your mind. And then that will then help you get in the mood and that will help relax you or help you deal with these things. And I struggle so much with meditation. And finally, I had a good friend who's a therapist that said to me, like, some people just aren't wired for that. Like that's not their thing. They can't just be still and be quiet. I'm like, yes, but that's what everybody tells me to do. That's like the magic thing that's supposed to happen. You know, I'm supposed to be able to do this and I can't do it. So I have to like, for me, you know, it is actually having noise in the house. Now, again, empty nester. So like it's quiet in the house. I have two little rambunctious dogs, but I have to have noise in the house. I have to have a TV on. I have to have music playing.
It ties into the whole learning about what you like sexually, but then it's also like learning what's going to get you in the right mindset. Like you said, like setting yourself up. For me, noises are a distraction. I have to have the quiet. So like if I even like think my daughter's coming towards the bedroom, like I freak out, you know, like I'm like on high alert for noises like that. So yeah, it's just setting yourself up. So maybe for me, it's like, let's do this when we know she's not around so that I don't have that distraction.
Yeah, absolutely. You know that there could potentially be a FedEx delivery is coming and you're like, it's between 10 and 2 and I don't know, like when people come right now and I'm, it's just all of the things. And I think just being aware of that, and we have to communicate this. We have to communicate this with my partner and just be honest with them. Like, hey, like, you know, once I said to my partner and I said, I am so sensitive to sounds or the idea that a kid is going to come home at any time. Like I cannot even concentrate. Like, really? Just creating that awareness with him and be able to say, like, the anticipation of someone walking through the door, the anticipation of, you know, the phone ringing or the any of those things really, like, they distract me. And that was really surprising to him. Like, really? Like, oh, not for me. And, you know, okay, so what can we do? And, you know, if your partner's solution focused, they're going to be like, what can we do to fix that? Like, okay, we'll lock a door. I'm going to go install a lock on the door, or I'm going to, you know, turn the phone off. Let's turn all the notifications off. It can change for sure.
I love those ideas.
So what's your advice? Like, do you have any tips? So let's say you're in a relationship, whether it's a new one, an old one, kind of for what I've gathered from this. And I like this. It's like, see it as a new thing. See it as an exciting thing, a fun thing, something to bring you enjoyment. So don't be scared of it. Think, hang on, here's a perfect opportunity for me to have some fun and enjoy myself, you know, whatever that may bring. It doesn't necessarily have to bring orgasm, or it doesn't have to involve toys. It doesn't have to involve other people. It could be very simple, and it could be, you know, we could start slowly and we can just discover. And I like that idea, because actually I'm never going to replicate the times I've had before, because I've been a bit crazy. And actually it's a bit embarrassing the next day when I think back, and a lot of it I can't remember. And that's not cool, because actually this is something that's very intimate. And let's be honest, most of us have had sex with people that we probably wouldn't have had sex with if we weren't drinking. Yeah. So we've got this opportunity. We're in a relationship. We're not drinking. Our partner knows we're not drinking, but we're not feeling it. Do you have any tips? So you've kind of given us a few. You've said talk about your feelings. You've mentioned the kind of love language. Go through that. Be honest. But are there any things people can do to try and spice things up in the bedroom to get things moving?
If you've always had sex in the same place, and especially if this was the place where you also were drunk during sex. So let's say it's your bedroom. You remember that there are things that have happened in this room that you were really out of it for, right? So I think kind of disassociating that, like, you know, maybe it is finding a new setting. Like, sex doesn't always have to be in the bedroom. I think we all know that. But I think in our sobriety, like, if it feels uncomfortable because you know that you have always had sex in that bed and you've always had alcohol, it's okay to try it somewhere else, you know? And again, this comes back to safety and kids in the house and all the kinds of things and what that might be, or a car or whatever it is, but maybe being open to the possibility of trying it in a different place, a different bedroom in the house, whatever it is for you. So being open to having it in a new setting because mm-hmm. then you can create new memories, right? And so you're going to connect, like, I can have sex on the basement couch. And that was actually kind of exciting. And that felt good because I wasn't thinking about the hundreds of times that we had sex in our bedroom and I was drunk. So by, you know, trying this new place, that could help by just changing that environment. And anything that used to be connected to how you used to do it in the past, if it's bringing up memories for you, like every time he does this, or every time we're in this room, or every time I smell this scent, it reminds me of the times we've had sex and I didn't enjoy it, or I didn't like it, or I was really crazy. Like maybe changing that scenario for yourself can really kind of create that change. Anything that you associate with that. And if it's your body, I think this is a huge obstacle for a woman. All of a sudden, we're very aware of our body. Weight we've added, weight we've lost. The extra wrinkles here, the extra dimples there. Like all of a sudden, we become more self-conscious of that. That's what, I mean, alcohol removed that for us, right? Alcohol like lessened that. And so now we're super aware of that. So I think I'd like to say like magically you become comfortable with your body and you embrace all of your beautiful curves. I think we hear that so much. And sometimes I get it, but I want to be real and say it's hard. All of a sudden you are more sensitive. Mine's not weight loss, mine's weight gain. And so all of a sudden I'm more self-conscious about the way my body looks when I lay on my side because my belly goes flop. That's not sexy. Are you kidding me? Okay. That's my mind. That's what I've been told. That's what I think. That's the imagery I've seen. That's my own self story I'm telling myself. I have said that to my partner and I'll be like, hey, like, I just feel so, like, I feel so bloated. I feel so, like you can't find me, you don't find me sexy anymore. And it really is, you know, I hope that you have a partner that will be like, I don't see that at all. And so maybe you're in a relationship like that. Maybe you're not. But I think just kind of, we are much more self-aware of our bodies. And I don't have a magic way to get through that. I think I have little tricks like start under the covers. If you were drinking and you walked into a room, like I'm gonna have sex, you know, you've got sexy lingerie on and the lights are on and you're like, look at me, like, and you're doing your power pose. If that was your thing, then that's not going to feel comfortable now. And it's okay to start under the covers and be like, I'm super self-conscious about my body. And this is, you don't have to tell your partner that. You can if you want. I'd like for you to. But if you don't want to, it's totally okay. And start under the covers and the lights are dimmed. And I'm going to put, you know, I've got my special light here that if I just tap and it turns on, like it makes me look really pretty, like for me. Now, does that sound like, should we be as women doing that? I don't know. But I know it works for a lot of people I talk to. And it's like, dim the lights, get under the covers. If that makes you feel sexy, that's okay. You know, it's totally okay. If you have, you know, one cute pair of G-string underwear that you think are like so cute, but you don't want to walk in a room with all the lights on, be like, look at me now.
Yeah.
If it's on and you're under the covers and you know, and it makes you feel pretty, if that could be the little thing that feels good to you, or maybe your partner really likes, then maybe that's the thing. And then you start from there. It doesn't have to be this big parade and lights and all that kind of stuff. It can be just you calling the shots and being comfortable with your body under the covers. And maybe one day you'll feel a little bit better. And maybe your partner will give you the affirmation you need. And maybe you'll start to feel more confident in month 6. I don't know, month 3, year 10. I don't know what it will be, but I think just kind of making those little small steps. You know, my goal is for us, for women to feel that they're not alone, that it's an okay conversation to have in whatever capacity you want to have it and whoever you want to have it with. I think it's important to be able to have that conversation. I don't know of places that exist that we can have sober people can sit and have just talk conversations about sex. It's something that I've been really thinking about a lot. Like, how can we, you know, outside of a podcast, outside of writing a book, you know, or something like that, like, where can we just kind of talk about intimacy and talk about these issues that come up and be at ease with it?
Thanks for tuning in. We're just two women from opposite sides of the pond striving to shed light on the negative impacts of alcohol. Quick heads up. We're not licensed therapists or doctors. If alcohol is seriously affecting your mental or physical health, seek professional help.
And don't forget to hit that follow button to catch all of our future episodes. If you think our podcast could make a difference to someone you know, share the love. And hey, leaving a 5-star review will really help the Sober Effect reach more fantastic people like you. So thank you.